Okay, let's unpack this. I want you to try a little mental exercise with me. When I say workplace discrimination, corporate discrimination specifically, what's the first image that pops into your head?
For most people, it's the loud stuff.
Yeah.
You know, the stuff you see in movies set in the 80s or 90s,
Right.
someone getting fired for no good reason, slurs being shouted across a trading floor, or literally someone locking the door to a boardroom. We think of it as these really overt, undeniable acts.
Exactly, the cartoon villain twirling his mustache. But here's the question that sent me completely down the rabbit hole with our sources today, and it might make you look at your own office a little differently. What if discrimination has evolved? What if the modern version doesn't look like a villain at all? What if instead it just looks like, well, standard operating procedure?
It's a terrifying thought, but a really essential one.
Yeah.
And today we're doing a deep dive into a specific federal complaint that, frankly, challenges everything we think we know about how power works in big business. We're looking at Carrie on v. Citigroup.
And just to set the stage for everyone listening, this isn't just a story about one woman and one bank. The sources we're looking at, especially a legal analysis from the Sanders firm and the complaint itself, they frame this as a masterclass in what's called structural discrimination.
It really is a case study.
We're going to look at how advancement can be granted without any real power, how your reputation can be weaponized against you, and this is the part that really got me, how HR might not be the neutral referee we all hope it is.
Right. And our prompt for today really asks that chilling question: when does process become punishment?
Before we go any further, though, we have to make a very clear disclaimer. We are discussing the allegations in a legal filing. Citigroup has its own side. The courts haven't decided anything. We are not here to determine guilt or
Not
innocence.
at all. We're here to analyze the structures and the systems described in the complaint because, true or not, they describe a playbook that I think a lot of people in the corporate world are going to recognize.
Absolutely. We're looking at the alleged mechanics. And to understand what's happening now, we actually have to go back in time.
Way back to 1996.
The year of the Macarena.
And apparently the year of the Boom Boom Room.
Okay, explain this. It sounds completely ridiculous, almost like a bad joke,
Yeah.
but the sources treat this as a really serious historical anchor for the whole case.
It does sound ridiculous, but in legal circles, Martins v. Smith Barney, the Boom Boom Room case, is legendary. And Smith Barney was, of course, Citigroup's predecessor.
Okay.
It was a class action lawsuit that exposed this culture of just pervasive, out-in-the-open sexual harassment. We're talking about a party room in the basement of a branch office. It was crude, it was loud, and the harassment was totally explicit.
So exactly that movie version of discrimination we just talked about.
The perfect example. And it led to a massive fallout, a $150 million settlement, and
Wow.
another $15 million for a diversity fund.
Yeah.
It was huge news at the time.
Which was supposed to be the watershed moment, right? The story was, okay, Wall Street got caught, they paid the fine, bad actors are gone, and now we're going to fix the culture.
Precisely. It was seen as the moment the industry finally grew up. But this is where our deep dive gets really interesting. The Carrion complaint argues that watershed moment, well, it never really happened.
Or it did, but the culture didn't transform, it just
It
adapted.
adapted. The source material calls this continuity, which is such a polite word for something so insidious.
It is.
The argument is that while the faces in the boardroom have changed and the employee handbook is perfectly politically correct now, the actual mechanism for keeping women out of real power is basically the same as it was 30 years ago.
So instead of a basement party room, the exclusion has just moved into the nuances of bureaucracy.
Exactly. It's cleaner, it's quieter, it's a lot harder to take a picture of, but the allegation is the result is the same. And that brings us to the plaintiff, Julia Carrion. Because to understand this evolution, you have to understand who they're excluding.
Right, because she doesn't fit the profile of some vulnerable entry-level employee. I mean, she wasn't an intern getting coffee.
Not at all. She was a heavy hitter. Recruited from Wells Fargo, where she managed over 500 employees across 13 states.
500 people.
She oversaw a $90 million operating budget. She was hired specifically because Citigroup had a, quote, bottom-of-the-industry digital client experience, and she was the person brought in to fix it.
So she had the competence, the track record. She comes in, gets the big title, and this is where we see that first major shift. It's not you can't have the job. It's what the sources call advancement without authority.
This concept is so crucial. In the old days, the glass ceiling was a hard barrier. You just couldn't get the title. with the Carrion complaint alleges is that today you can get the title. She was named Global Head of Platform and Experiences. Sounds impressive, though.
It sounds huge. It sounds like you're running the show. If I saw that on LinkedIn, I would assume she was calling all the shots.
But the complaint alleges that while she got the title, she was stripped of the resources. She was excluded from key meetings. She was allegedly told to just find something to do.
Find something to do.
Meanwhile, her male peers working on similar projects had full support, budgets, teams, everything.
It's like being made the captain of the Titanic, but they take the steering wheel off before you get on board.
That is a perfect analogy. It's a strategy of containment. If you promote someone, but you take away all the tools they need to succeed, you aren't advancing them. You're just setting the stage to later claim they didn't add value.
It creates a paper trail of failure that looks like incompetence, but it was actually engineered from the start.
And that's the standard operating procedure part, isn't it? If you look at the paperwork a year later, It just looks like she didn't hit her KPIs. It doesn't look like discrimination. It looks like performance management.
It gives them plausible deniability. We gave her the shot. She just couldn't handle it. It completely masks the sabotage.
So that's step one, containment. But step two is where things get, honestly, a lot darker. And stranger. This involves Andy Sieg, the head of City Wealth.
Right, and this is where the complaint pivots to what our sources are calling reputational sabotage.
It deals with what one legal analysis calls sexualized suspicion.
And initially, Sieg was her advocate, right? He's the one who supported her getting the promotion.
Correct, but the complaint alleges this support. It morphed into something else. And this is crucial. It wasn't about him hitting on her in private. It wasn't the standard, you know, come to my hotel room scenario. It was about performing an affair in public.
Performing an affair. That is such a specific, bizarre phrase. What does that even look like in an office?
Well, the allegations are that Sieg would imply intimacy in front of colleagues. He'd insist on conspicuous physical proximity in meetings.
Sitting too close, whispering to her while other people are talking.
Exactly. He'd reference secret shared songs and, this is the wildest part, allegedly used a burner phone to contact her.
Wait, a burner phone? In a corporate banking environment?
That is the allegation, that he had a separate phone just for communicating with her, which, you know, implies this whole level of secrecy and an illicit connection.
Okay, so usually when we hear about harassment, someone's trying to hide their advances. This sounds like he was trying to broadcast them. Why? What's the point?
That is the billion-dollar question. And the expert commentary we read points to this being a form of reputational poisoning. Think about it. If you're a powerful male executive and you create the appearance of an inappropriate relationship with a female subordinate, what happens?
Rumors start instantly.
Right. And the rumors say she didn't earn her job. She's only there because she's sleeping with the boss.
It completely delegitimizes her. All that expertise, the 500 people she managed, the $90 million budget, it all just vanishes.
Doof. Gone.
There.
It destroys her authority. It isolates her from her peers because now she's just the boss's favorite. And it answers that question from our prep notes. Should the law treat reputational harm as a core workplace injury? This complaint argues it destroyed her ability to lead.
It's almost more effective, isn't it? Because if she complains, she sounds crazy. Oh, he's just being friendly. Why are you reading so much into it?
Precisely. It uses the ambiguity of social interaction as a weapon. If she says he's sitting too close, she sounds petty. But the cumulative effect is that everybody in the room thinks they're involved.
So she's in this no-win situation, and naturally, she tries to address this. She goes to human resources, which brings us to one of the most provocative parts of this whole thing. Is HR neutral, or is it institutional alignment?
This is the process's punishment phase. And according to the complaint, when HR got involved, they didn't investigate Andy Sieg, the powerful executive allegedly using a burner phone.
Don't tell me.
They launched a secret investigation into Carrion.
Wait, hold on. She goes to them with concerns about this dynamic and they investigate her.
Yes. The focus of their investigation was basically, is she a bully? Was she using her special access to Sieg to get an unfair advantage?
That is. Wow. So they took the very rumors that Sieg allegedly planted and used those rumors as the reason to investigate her.
That is the allegation. It completely flips the script.
Yeah.
She goes from being the potential victim of harassment to the perpetrator of manipulation. And the language they allegedly used is so telling. Investigators asked witnesses if she was indiscreet or a gossip.
Indiscreet? Gossip? Those words feel incredibly loaded.
They are highly gender-coded. You just don't hear about male executives being investigated for being a gossip. It frames her behavior as femininely disruptive, not professionally assertive. It suggests she's the source of all the drama.
And when she found out what happened, when she asked if Sieg was also being investigated,
she was told no. And the source material has this chilling line, something that really answers that question about HR's neutrality. It says, internal investigations flow only downward.
That just says it all. The flashlight only shines down the ladder, never up.
It perfectly illustrates this idea of compliance as control. We think of HR as the safe harbor, but the complaint argues it functioned as a shield for the powerful and a disciplinary tool for the person challenging power.
And the double standard was right there too.
Well, clearly. When Carrion had previously reported racist and sexist behavior in the office, HR allegedly did nothing. Silence. But when she became the subject of rumors involving the boss,
they mobilized immediately.
So the investigation itself becomes the punishment. It wasn't about finding the truth. It was about bringing her into line. By interviewing her team and asking if she was indiscreet, HR was effectively validating the rumors. It signaled to the whole company that she was the problem.
It's like the system is designed to identify the person who doesn't fit the mold and just reject them while protecting the host organism.
That is a very good way to put it. It's an immune response by the corporate culture.
Okay, I want to zoom out for a second because normally we wouldn't be reading any of this. We wouldn't know about the burner phone or the specific questions HR asked. The stuff usually disappears into a black hole.
That black hole is called mandatory arbitration.
Right. Something most people sign on day one of a new job without even reading it.
Almost everyone. And for decades, those clauses said if you have a dispute, even for sexual harassment, you cannot go to court. You have to go to private arbitration.
Hmm.
It's a private room, a private judge, and crucially, it is totally confidential. No public record.
So it's another containment mechanism. It keeps the dirty laundry inside.
Exactly. It privatized discrimination. It let companies handle these claims one by one in the dark so a pattern could never become visible.
But we are reading this complaint. It's a public document. Why? What changed?
This is where the whole legal landscape has shifted. We have to talk about the EFAA. The Ending Forced Arbitration of Sexual Assault and Sexual Harassment Act.
Catchy name, but a huge impact.
Massive. It was passed fairly recently, and it says for sexual harassment and assault claims, you cannot force someone into arbitration. They have the right to go to open court. And that's why this case is so significant. It's one of the first major stress tests of this new law.
Sunlight a structural disruption.
Yes. Because of the EFA, we can see the playbook. The promotion without authority, the reputational poisoning, the weaponized HR, it's all laid out for everyone to see. Regulators, shareholders, the public, us.
That has to change the risk calculation for a company, right? Before, the risk was just money. A settlement. For a huge bank, a few million dollars is a rounding error.
A cost of doing business.
Yeah.
But now, the risk is reputational. The board of directors has to look at this public document and ask, is this how our internal investigations work? Are we exposing ourselves to massive liability because our HR department is protecting executives instead of following the law?
It forces a level of accountability money alone could never achieve.
Mm-hmm.
And it all comes back to that idea of process. The complaint isn't just saying this guy was a jerk. It's saying Citigroup's process was discriminatory.
Correct. The prompt for this deep dive asked, at what point does process become punishment? And the answer this case suggests is when the process is selective. When the rules are applied rigorously to the outsider and just ignored for the insider, that's when neutral bureaucracy becomes a weapon.
And it is so subtle. That's what sticks with me. On paper, it looks standard. She was promoted. There were complaints about her leadership. HR investigated. She left.
That is the evolution of exclusion. It's designed to look standard. The discrimination has migrated from you can't work here to you can work here, but you can't have power. And if you challenge us, we will use our own internal processes to dismantle your reputation.
It's gaslighting on an institutional scale.
It is. And it relies on making the victim look like the problem. If you scream about unfairness, you seem unstable. If you question the rumors, you're a gossip. It's a trap.
So where does this leave us? We have this complaint. We have the EFAA opening the doors. What's the big takeaway for someone listening who maybe isn't in banking but works in any larger organization?
The takeaway is that we need to update our definition of discrimination. We're still looking for that smoking gun, the email, the slur. But modern discrimination is structural. It's about resource allocation. It's about who gets investigated. It's about who gets to have a reputation.
And transparency. Getting rid of that arbitration shield doesn't fix the problem overnight.
No, but it makes it visible.
Mm-hmm.
And you cannot fix what you cannot see. For the first time, we're really seeing the machinery. So the question is no longer, does this stuff happen? The question is, now that we see it, what will accountability actually look like?
That is the billion-dollar question. Will shareholders care? Will regulators step in? Or will the playbook just evolve again?
That remains to be seen. But cases like this suggest the era of silence is ending. Companies can no longer rely on the shadows. And if you're an employee or an executive or an HR professional listening, you have to ask yourself, is the process where I work designed for neutrality, or is it designed for containment?
It's a sobering deep dive, but a really necessary one. It makes you look at every sudden resignation a little differently.
It certainly does. It reminds us to always look at the structure underneath the story.
Well, that's all for this deep dive into Carry On V Citigroup. It's a developing story and one we'll be watching closely.
Absolutely.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you on the next one.